morning, Gloucester. We're here with the probably, well, not probably, but absolutely the most famous person we've ever interviewed. A man that anybody over the age of 30 knows.
Maybe 40.
40, you think?
I was in 1980 to 90, so.
Yes.
They had to be 10 years old to get my jokes. Let's just say that 1980, that makes him 40-something now.
I'm here with Gallagher. And Gallagher, anybody, I guess, over 40 would recognize you from the...
But they can go on YouTube and see my videos. I got 5 pages of videos on YouTube.
And as far back as the Merv Griffin Show, that shows how long
you
were alive.
Oh, you remember Merv? He was the best host of all. He'd talk to you. I was just on Dave Letterman because he heard about my heart attack and everything. He didn't come to my dressing room before the show. I thought he'd drop by, but what it was is he wanted to apologize for stealing Sledge-O-Matic from me and throwing watermelons off of buildings when he first got to New York. He knew he was doing me, and he just thought I'd never go anywhere, and he was the big, powerful guy, and he'd just steamroll my career. That's what he did. He doesn't care about anybody.
You mentioned heart attack. You said you had 4 heart attacks. What are the chances, what are you pegging your odds that someone would actually be able to see you have a heart attack on stage in Beverly, this Saturday night?
I would say 1 out of 8.
1 out of 8?
Oh, yeah.
That would be good stuff. But make sure we have cameras there. Oh, we're going to have cameras there?
Oh, you're going to?
Because that would be big.
Okay, bring it.
All right, bring the cameras.
I want to die that way and not, you know, because I do a lot of embarrassing things. And I keep thinking to myself, what if I died now? And then they'd have to report, well, he died the way he lived. Laying under a truck, trying to light a joint using the axle because it blocked the wind. But sometimes I'm in situations where, you know, it'd be embarrassing for the whole world to know. And I could die doing that.
Yeah, well, there's way more embarrassing things than dying on stage.
I do them, but I just wanted to use that one example. Because I was underneath that truck and I thought, what do they think? Why was I under the truck? But I work a lot of different places that aren't really theatrical. They'll just put up a stage anywhere and make me make it into theater and make it magic. It's amazing.
Speaking of theater, like, how did you convince, back in the day, you're doing Sledge-O-Matic, how did you convince theater owners to allow you to demolish their places?
Well, here's the deal. If you get rid of your agent and manager and you just rent the place yourself, then there's no adults there for the show. I got rid of the adults. No, we put plastic on the chairs, and I made sure they didn't take the plastic off. You hear my tone? That's how I deal with the kids. We're going to have the most fun we can, safely, without ruining anything. Yeah. And I've done over 3,000 shows.
That's amazing. And the creativity, like, how is it? You just showed me your iPad.
Yeah.
You told me you had 200 pieces that you have created recently. How important do you get as a creator?
Yeah.
Do you get depressed if you're like in a rut and you're not creating? Does your mind go crazy?
No, that doesn't happen with me. I got into comedy as a way of getting publishing my jokes and my poem. All my shows have a poem in it. One of them had a poem about water. One had a poem about the whales. That was a good one. How did that go? One night I was walking on the beach, that's what I found. Out of the waves come a humpback whale jumping up and down. Then come a herd of finback whales and a gang of killers too. Then wouldn't you know, thar she blows, the whale in charge was huge. And I was talking about the whales. That was in my second show. You can see it on YouTube, I think. There's a poem in all of them, or a song. I did one, Don't Kick My Tires If You Ain't Gonna Drive Me Home. That was a good one. But you know, I worked with Jim Stafford at the very beginning of his career and helped him on his songs. We had one about homosexuals, My Girl Bill. You can go on iTunes and you can find it. Wildwood Weed, and then he had a big hit, Spiders and Snakes. And actually, Bruce Springsteen opened for him back in those days, and I was his road manager. And so I've been into funny songs from the very beginning.
You were born, you moved to Tampa, your formative years were in Tampa, is that right?
No, in Ohio.
Ohio?
Yeah.
But you seem like a hippie. Like,
I guess I am.
If I had to guess, it would have been Southern California. But where would you say your most influences came from?
Well, dodging the draft and smoking dope. And I was doing that in Florida, but I felt connected to the demonstrators in California. So as soon as I graduated from college, 69, I went out to L.A.
Yeah, there you go. What, you know, in this day and age, I don't understand how a comedian can the political correctness and the sensitivity, overly sensitive, like the way people are. I don't understand how a comic finds, like...
Oh, I just say what I want to and then they complain. That's why I don't have a Facebook page that I go to. There's some business people that have Facebook pages for me. But it just gives a forum to people who want to complain about something. And it is terrible about everything.
You know the lady that had a midget son? And she complained about the classic midget pickle, and they took midget pickle off the pickle jar that's been on there for like a bazillion years. That's how sensitive like the world has become. So I don't understand, like for a comedian.
But wait a minute! Now you'd only take it off if the pickles complain. The pickles would have to complain. You can't. What she's saying is my son is a midget, and I don't like these pickles saying anything about it. But the pickles should say, look, we were midgets first, and they're just using that name on you.
That's right.
See, I can never be president. Every day I'd say something that would irritate another voting bloc, and I'd lose them all eventually.
But I don't understand, like, you know, Don Rickles and
these people. Their cake is so good.
Thank you.
They could say whatever they wanted to say, and they had carte blanche. I don't understand how, like, who gets to decide what's right and who's wrong.
Right, because I was watching Spider-Man and he does a gay joke. He says to this guy who's dancing something like, oh, where'd you learn that from? Your husband? And you're supposed to laugh just because he said he was gay and really nothing clever about it. And I get in trouble with the gays all the time, and at least I tell clever gay jokes.
There you go.
But I'm just including them. Don't the gays want to be included?
There you go. Well, all about equality right there.
Oh, I've got black jokes that I love, and handicapped jokes. I want to include everybody.
No, you're not. Yeah, equal.
I'm a joke teller.
That's it.
So no, why did they get that? I'm not running for Congress.
I'm with you.
Here's the problem is they'll take a video of you in a nightclub, in a funky place, and then they'll play it in a la-di-da place, and of course it's not appropriate there. But I'm in a bar in Oklahoma, you know,
but
and now you're going
to... Isn't this what... Like, I think it's kind of a betrayal of a comedian to say that you can't do these jokes. Like, this is the whole idea of what you're... It's satire. It's jokes. It's cleverness. But they try to, like... pigeonhole all of society into making everybody vanilla, and it's just, it seems like...
Except that, well, the sitcoms all have a gay character.
Yeah. Notice that.
There you go. I don't know. So I just don't do it anymore.
Worth it, right? The aggravation?
Right. I've been writing about animals lately. Mm-hmm. I've got a really good penguin poem. I have a whole children's book I'm going to try to find an illustrator, and I think I did. I was staying up here in Rockport at the Emerson, and I had a bed that looked right out on the Atlantic, and I thought I'd go and see the sculptor in the area in Wyatt? Wickham?
Williams.
Everett. In Everett, and a guy that was working there, he says, oh, I'm an artist, and I'm a computer animator, and so I gave him the poems, and he's going to do it. It's just magical up here. I'm meeting people. Last night at the Rum Line, I met a drummer, and he lives four blocks from the theater, and he's going to come and go ba-dum-bump for my jokes. It's going to be great. And then we're going
to
have...
Do you need any food for backstage? I'll come to the show, too.
I've got seats for you. We've got half a house. I'm trying to sell the other half of the house. So guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to give away this shirt. I just ordered 300. They're going to be delivered today. I'm going to give away a shirt to everybody who buys a ticket from this point on.
That's very generous.
Uh-huh.
Signed, right?
It's about $2,000.
Yeah, holy mackerel. You know, today it seems like comedians are racing. Like, every comedian feels like they have to have their own podcast. Do you think that the internet has done to comedy what it has done to the music? Because does anybody do albums anymore?
Well, they're calling my recent thing an album. You can find it on SoundCloud or Pandora or Spotify. I'm with it. Hey, I may look old, but I'm cutting edge.
Does it hurt the industry or does it help it?
It helps it because these executives work out of fear. When they're making a decision, just like you said, somebody's going to complain and I want to sell them soap and a car and a refrigerator, and so let's work around that if we can. But the internet is wild. You can do and say what you want. And but the problem is you monetizing it. They make a lot of money on Ford and Coke ads.
So
the money's with being white bread.
Well, back in the day, they said that people made albums, but they made pennies on every album, but touring was where the money was.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the same thing in comedy, right?
No, there's a lot of money in records. It's just the record company steals it all. And there's money in movies and the movie company, because they just pile on the expenses. You make a deal with it for after expenses, and there's never any money left. Even Woody Allen argued with his producers that were trying to take a movie that made money and add it against a movie that lost money, and they split up over it. And Woody still wanted to go to dinner. I wrote a song about him. You know, when he had an affair, or I guess he's married now to that. Are they married? No, it was a step. Well, then it wasn't even step. You know, they adopted her because she was Chinese or some Vietnamese or something like that. But he said, the heart wants what the heart wants. And I thought, that's a good hook. So I wrote a song about that. You just get moved and then you focus. And
you boiled down the Ten Commandments, didn't you?
I did. I got it down to four that are worth it. Lie, steal, hurt each other, because not that many people kill. We want the kids that are hurting each other to think a second time. And then honor your parents. You want to hear the one about honor your parents? Honor who's your daddy, who with mommy gave you life. They work so hard so you can have the right clothes and a bike. They're always there for you when you're looking for a fight. They save their money and make do, so you can blow it all at night? No! Thou shalt not think what's in mom's purse is yours. Thou shalt not use your parents to mop the floors. Don't they deserve a little more? And don't move mom's yogurt out the fridge to make more room for your cores. And don't try to get the last word in with them that taught you all of yours. That's cute, isn't it?
That's awesome.
Boiling it down right there. Breaking it down.
I do. I break it down and give them something. You got to have a spoonful of sugar with the medicine. Put the truth in a fun way. That's the idea.
When you touring and stuff like that, you were such a headliner. Did you have opening acts and stuff like that?
Never. I don't want anybody to talk to the audience before me. What if they say the word cocaine and cocaine gets a big laugh? Well, I want to have the surprise. When you introduce, when you say a name, a word, that word comes out on stage. And if somebody else says it, the audience will go, oh, we already seen that guy, it's the second time, and it has to be a better joke. So I was opening act for Kenny Rogers in 1980 to 81, that touring year. And so I never want anybody to open for me. I'm an opening act that can close, basically. Yeah. I open for myself and... Yeah. So I never met a lot of the comics that, you know, they always take around other comics on the road with them, right. I never wanted that, so I didn't meet them.
Any Boston area comics that you like?
I wouldn't know. Well, I like Jay. I've known Jay his whole career when he first came out to L.A. He used to stand next to me. Now, I had my props in a suitcase, you see, because you have to walk through the crowd at the Comedy Store, the Improv, or whatever club that we were at the beginning now. I was there at the beginning for Robin Williams, Jay, Dave. I started the strike at the Comedy Store because I knew Mitzi. I hung out at her house in the daytime. I helped her to get the Comedy Store, and then she wouldn't pay the... And she had a big house. I said, Mitzi, you have a big house, and I know a lot of comics that are sleeping on another guy's couch, and they're doing the show. We can throw them $25. Well, I know it's a workshop, and they don't need to be paid. So then Jay came to my house for the meeting on whether to strike or not. But he would always say to me, and I'd have my suitcase, if I was going to use props, my hammer and my vegetables, I had to have in a suitcase and carry it through the audience. He would whisper to me right before I went on, right before I went on, he'd say, "Props are the enemy of wit." You know.
Now Carson had a problem with
heels, and yet you'd think, but I got him back. I thought of a routine where Johnny was in a suitcase, and I sold it. I opened the suitcase. You can see it on YouTube. And Johnny pops out. You pull one string, and he touches his tie, and the other string, he throws his pencil. I showed that to Freddie D. Cordova, the producer, in his office. They loved it. I was preying upon their own ego.
Right, right, right.
Instead of doing Sledge-O-Matic, and it took me about 6 months to develop the routine, because it still had to be funny and have jokes in it. I had to do it in clubs. And, you know, here I'm going to do the Tonight Show home game. But still, I had it down good for the... You can see it. I was a little nervous at the end. My hand is shaking a little bit. I saw that. When you go, my whole life is on YouTube. You can see me from when I first started, and I had a shiny little face with no wrinkles. But I wasn't very good until I'm older now and I have wrinkles. And I'm an excellent comic now. But I don't even like to watch myself because I know I can always do it better.
Yeah,
it's all about talking.
So I went to a comedy show in Gloucester 2 weekends ago, and there was three acts. First one, Steve Sweeney, a guy, Boston comic for like 30 years, kills it every time. And then there was the middle guy. It was just dead. Like, how much confidence do you have to bring? Like, do you know you're going to kill
not,
it?
No.
Do you know you're going to kill it every time? Do you still run into dead audiences?
They're not dead. You haven't done your research. They are facing you, and they want to laugh. They showed up there. You don't know them. Your problem is, as a comedian, is you think what you think is funny to them, and you don't have an alternative. So you have to go on stage with a lot of different kinds of jokes. And, right, you need 2 hours to do a half an hour. And that's one-fourth of your time anyway. And then you need to ad-lib some, too. They probably weren't skilled. They had to notice what the first comic did, how much energy they took. I rest them. After they've laughed a lot, I do a routine. I might do a poem, see, that doesn't have a lot of laughs in it, but it's still entertaining. Like, I have one about boobs. I'm a rooter for the Hooters. I'm a fan of the gland. I'm just a knocker-gocker. In other words, a man. I try to look girls in the eye, but that ain't who I am. I'm a cripple for the nipple and the part that don't get tan. Great ones, fake ones, little bitty bits. Any little jiggle gonna give me fits. I gotta stop what I'm doing. I gotta check out, is that a heavage in the cleavage? I'm just a boob for tits. That's funny.
Just a boob for tits.
So you just rest them, and they still were entertained, you know, but it's all about energy. Energy. You have to understand what you're doing. I don't think many comics pay attention to what they're doing. I ask them, I say, why'd you talk about yourself so much? Well, it's true. That doesn't matter to the audience. They're there on a date with another couple, paying a lot for drinks. Maybe they pay for parking and a babysitter. And you want to do therapy? You should talk about them. They should fill out a card about their worries and aspirations and fears, and study that before you go out and be relevant. You know, I don't know why all these comics, the truth doesn't matter. If you're an actor on the stage and you're in a service business, you should be serving the public. You ask them what they want to drink. You should ask them what that kind of humor that they want. Most of the men comics don't pay attention to the women in the audience. The women just roll their eyes back as if they were talking about sports. You know, they just don't care. And men don't know this. So I talk about how stupid men are, and it just brings the room alive because all the women are on my side, and I don't care about the men anyway. They're just nuts. They don't pay attention. They don't listen. They don't listen, and women want to talk. Is this the stupidest idea, a heterosexual relationship? I don't even get it. Because, you know, men aren't listening. They're on a fishing trip. Their eyes are glazed over. They're facing you. Women say, we're going to have a talk. And men know, we don't get to talk during a talk. You just have to listen. They might as well say, we don't have to have a listen. But men don't listen. They don't listen. Then that frustrates the women. I'm surprised there aren't more lesbian relationships. They just get sick of men late in life.
I'm on board with that.
I see the lesbians would probably be mad at me about that, but it doesn't seem like it was critical. I'm writing a musical about bisexual dancing. I'm here, I'm making high heels where the heel folds up into the shoe so that you can walk on flats or you can have heels. I think the human being should have the option of being 3.5 to 4 inches taller at any moment.
Just like that.
Then I have these shirts, these little jackets, and the epaulette. This is called an epaulette. When you like who you're dancing with and they excite you, your epaulette goes up. And then when you really get excited, you pull a string and a hanky comes out of your epaulette. Then you're dancing with these hankies flow. Isn't that going to be great? I'm designing bisexual dance outfits. It's just another thing. I'm making the world a better place. You know, a good idea is a real burden to the person who has it, because I want to make the world a better place and I need to plant this seed where it's going to grow. I met with a woman, though, at a cocktail party recently in the area here, and she's making a costume for me. I need a duck costume. If you go on my website, GallagherSmash.com, or just Google me, it's there. It's a duck. See, I'm teaching the kids how to eat right, because they only want to eat grease and sugar. They don't want lettuce and tomato on their burger. Plain, they all yell on the go-through, plain. So this duck eats different colors of plants on the bottom of the lake. So if you looked in his belly, if he had a porthole, you would see a rainbow. So if the kids eat different colored foods, they get a sticker that goes on their belly of a porthole with a rainbow in it, and that's what they want. But you see, a duck is like a boat. It's half of a rowboat. So I'm looking for an artist to make a duck costume that incorporates a boat. Because you know why they waddle? You would too if you were carrying a rowboat. Nobody walks real good carrying a boat. And so it's also a poem about how we shouldn't judge people before we know all of their talents. Because a duck can go real high, he can dive under the water, he can go on the water. The walk-in's the only one he can't do good. And it's a really cute poem. You can see it on my website. And there's only like three things on my website. I have a very simple website because my manager quit recently and took my website with him. He told me it was his. I can't believe this world. I'm telling you.
So what is your website again, just so people can know?
Well, it doesn't matter. If you Google Gallagher, my website comes up as the top one, GallagherSmash.com, and you can see my duck poem. A duck unjusted waddle I must, even at full throttle, waddle and thrust. I don't kick up dust. If I do, it ain't much. Lucky for me, I'm never that rushed. I'll get there someday in my waddly way. Like I say, and this is going to be thoroughly discussed, my oddly made body makes waddling a must. Sing. His oddly made body makes waddling a must. And it goes on from there.
Very nice, very nice. So this Saturday night...
I was really a rapper before any of these rappers, wasn't
that's
I?
Really
I've been writing poems since 40 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. This Saturday night, though. The Larkin Theater.
If you can't have fun on Saturday night, when are you ever going to have fun? You know, some people say it was the best time they ever had. That's a responsibility. Some of them come with their kids. Yep. And then that's a good... Well, they
is
might be... They're
the
60. Their kids are 40. And they're kids that got kids. I take pictures before the show. I know there's a whole family here, you know. And they're bringing, usually grandma is my fan in the group. But then they'll tell me about grandpa. He never goes anywhere. This first time I've seen him with his pants on. He'll tell me.
Very nice. It's Saturday night. The Larkin Theater.
You can get, and you get a shirt.
And you get a shirt.
Autograph. Now put your name on it. That's got to be worth 50 if I die, don't you think?
You don't stand up on the stage. The people actually have access
to
it.
Yeah,
all that.
Yeah.
A legend. I mean, a legend in the comedy field.
Yeah, but I want to be the celebrity that I would want my celebrity to be. And I don't want him sitting in the dressing room.
Yeah,
we brought the money. We're waiting for you to tell some jokes.
There you go.
I had 4 heart attacks. Every day is a blessing. So if I make it to Saturday, it'll be a good show.
1 out of 8 chance of a heart attack on Saturday.
I think about 1 out of 8.
So call, you can get the tickets. Give me Saturday.
I'll probably find some dope.
Give me live.
I'm going to be smoking. I know I'm going to be smoking.
That's what you do. GiveMeLive.tv. LarkinTheater.com. You can get the tickets either place.
Oh, I love it. You can look on there and see how many tickets have been sold.
Really?
Yeah, you pick your seat just like on an airplane. You can see that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you can.
There's 70 more on the bottom, and then all the balcony.
But there's no bad seats there.
200, yeah, there are. There's no, about 10 of them that are behind poles, and they colored those seats brown, because I guess you're a big piece of poop if you sit there. I don't know who'd want them or why they'd even tell them about these seats. Go on there, you'll see. There's about 10 brown ones.
Yeah, the women with the muscles.
There's 100 more good seats.
There's not a bad seat in the house.
Oh,
gallery.
Come on.
The poles are only 6 inches, so if you have a big head, all you have to do is tilt it one way. Come on.
There you go. LaughingTheater.com, GimmeLive.tv, Gallagher's in the house, legendary, probably, it has to be one of the top 10 comics of all time.
That's what I think.
Top three.
They're not working. I've done over 3,000 shows. This is the hard. Anybody can kick back and do a talk show and a sitcom. Oh, let me see you face 200 drunks every night.
Damn straight.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or on other drugs.
Those Showtime specials, I mean.
But I've moved on. I have new material. I've got jokes about what's happening now.
Yeah, and you interact with the audience as well.
You have to.
There you go. All right, Saturday night, get your tickets, free T-shirt, Gallagher, man of the people. He's gonna preach. You're gonna preach.
I'm gonna smash everybody, even though I don't have my hammer.
There you go. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time.